Thanks, Sasha Bodhi. It is very nice to meet someone for the first time who you've met online. And it happens actually all day. I've been meeting people here who I see every day on Twitter. I had such sauna with somebody this morning that I see every day on Twitter. And it was like, oh, hello. So I'm going to get you to do a little exercise actually to start off. Although we're going to talk about the internet. If you could turn to the person next to you, if we got an even number of people, you could do it, the spare person could do it with me, that's fine. Oh, well actually, yeah, you could do it, that'd be great. So it's very simple, a very simple little exercise. I just want you to, you know, take the other person in. You don't have to say the cow is on the field or any of that stuff. This is the new tree rat in the Buddhist creed, we don't do that anymore. And what I want you to do is actually, and once you feel you've taken the person in, just hold your hands up near each other but without touching, so that you're kind of very close but not actually touching. And then when you feel you've got a sense of the person's physical presence, you can feel the heat in the air between your hands, maybe just close your eyes. So just keep a sense of the kind of physicality of that person near you, the presence of another being, just out of touch, just out of your reach. And maybe imagine a little connection of golden light between your palm and your friend's palm. And then between all of us here in this tent, these connections of light just passing between us. And then even though we're quite few, just from us radiating out through the whole of the Buddha Field site, from this tent to the Dharma Dome next door, and all the way down through this field, through the lower field. Connections of light. So that all the tents are linked in a web of light and connection. While we're at it, let's send all that out into the world with warm wishes for the best of everyone, whatever your state and whatever their state. And when you feel you've got a good sense of that, you can just open your eyes again and we'll bring it to a close. So several of you in this room will already know this kind of area, but if you've ever had any kind of initiation into a spiritual tradition of any kind, or even done a guided visualization or meditation, you'll recognize that kind of thing. In our Tridatna Buddhist order, we have a practice called sadhana practice. When you join the order, usually but not always, you're given a sadhana practice, which is often or most often a bodhisattva or a Buddha figure. And the idea is that you basically visualize this figure, ideally every day. Not everybody manages to do it every day, but ideally every day. And you dwell upon their qualities. Well, you dwell upon their kind of presence, and you dwell upon the look of them. And over time, you develop a sense of a feel for them. And the idea is that if you set your heart upon those qualities, in time, those qualities become part of your heart. There's a particular term that's used in the kind of North Indian Tantric tradition, which moves into Tibetan, called the Samaya bond. And this sense of a bond between people, or between you and the figure that you're visualizing, is very important. And the idea is that over time you cultivate and maintain and develop a sense of this bond, and a sense of the qualities, and then something happens. So over time something happens. Now quite what happens has got an element of necessary mystery about it. And that's key, that there's a sense of mystery about it. But something happens. And so you've got this relationship between you and a figure, and it's kept conscious, or at least as conscious as you can make it, but at the same time it filters in deep because you're maintaining it. You've also got just a sense of being affected and in some way changed by a bond that you've been maintaining. And that change isn't necessarily dramatic, but it might be that over years, a bit like water eroding away at rock, you become a little less sharp-edged. You're a little kinder, you've maybe got a little more awareness in certain moments that arise in your day-to-day life. And you've got this sense of mystery. That's one of the key components. So, you know, is the experience of the Buddha and Bodhisattva figure, is it real? Is it not real? Is it imagined? Does it even matter if it works in your life? So you're kind of carrying this around with you. And most often, the element in this that's evoked is something that people refer to as felt presence, having a sense of felt presence for a figure. I don't have time to go into felt presence, and that's a really particularly interesting area to me today, but probably the key thing is that if you maintain that sort of practice over time, an awareness of another figure of qualities that you'd like to develop, it's possible for them to become a constant feature of your experience as you go about your life day to day. So you probably wonder, what's that got to do with the internet? What's this all got to do with Web 2? So I'm going to do little teases today, so we'll kind of get onto the internet, and we'll do it through a sense of web history. I'll do some web history for you, and I'll talk about a little bit about my own work specifically. So in 1998-1999, there was a guy in America called Sean Fanning. Now, you may not have heard of Sean Fanning, but he changed your world. Sean Fanning started an internet startup from his college dorm room called Napster. And Napster, does anybody heard of Napster? Yeah. So the original Napster was like the most exciting thing that had happened on the internet. I remember sitting in my bedroom when I was like, 18 years old, something like that, and just finding this thing called Napster. And what Napster did was it connected everybody's computers all over the world. It was the first popular mass setting online for people's computers to talk to each other, sort of peer-to-peer networking. And it existed so you could download music from each other. And at that point, it wasn't even clear that that was illegal. This was before they sort of been established that that was illegal, because under previous cultural norms, it wasn't necessarily illegal to share music. You can go around to somebody's house and lend them their CD, for instance. That's not illegal. But if you give somebody a file from your computer, that is illegal. It's since been determined. Back then, it was a grey area, and millions of people did this every day, on virtually overnight. And it's maybe hard. We take this kind of thing for granted nowadays. Just the sort of global scale, the massive scale of this at the time, it was completely radical, and it radicalized a whole generation of kids who were kind of age to go out into the world and start forming their views about how things should and shouldn't work. When I look back at Napster, was shut down, of course, as these things inevitably are. When I look back on it, I was thinking about this and thinking the most important thing about it wasn't the fact that it was illicit and that you got a certain thrill from taking part. And it wasn't even the fact that it was just a sort of infinite source of free music. It was the fact that there were so many people connected to each other. And it blew my mind. I remember at the time just thinking, this is absolutely astonishing. Like, all these people, I can go and look in their computers and they don't even know I exist. Totally fantastic. So at that time, when Napster was in its heyday, I was working at Dharma Chakra Tapes, as it used to be called, in Cambridge, and I'd just taken over managing the project, which was a very sleepy backwater little SMU, right, livelihood. And we were kind of in this position where we sold CDs and tapes. We just finished a big project to put all of Sangharakshita's talks on a CD, and it cost a lot of money, and it had been a lot of heartache trying to persuade people that it was a good idea. And this is in 2000, you know. So, and I remember at the time thinking, it's the year 2000. I'm having to convince people that CDs are a good idea. And I got letters of complaint from people saying you're excluding people by having CDs instead of tapes. And I remember thinking, we're so far behind, it's not even funny. Because this Napster thing that's happening, and like all the kids are doing it, and Apple had just brought out the first iPod, and you could fit all of Sangharakshita's talks on something that was in your pocket suddenly. And there was a real danger of us being left behind again, all over again, having just sort of caught up 15 years late. So it so happened at the time we were having a lot of trouble trying to make ends meet by selling stuff. At most, we sold a couple of thousand tapes and CDs a year, and it was only to people who could afford to buy them. And our charitable remit was to distribute the Dharma as widely as we possibly could. So there was a big, mismatch going on. So we decided to take a little bit of a risk, and it wasn't a very popular risk. People thought it was a very bad idea generally, which was that we were going to sort of skip CDs and just rip all the CDs the way you would rip a music CD and make some MP3s and stick them on the web for free. We were going to do a Napster. So it was a very exciting time. It was completely mad, and Free Buddhist Audio was born as a project. It took 3 years to get it up. We had to raise some money, and there were a lot of politics around it. It was a very contentious thing to do, and but we did it in the end. So freebuddhistaudio.com was born. Has everybody used Free Buddhist Audio? Has everybody heard of it? Come across it? Good. So I don't have to say anything. I wanted to highlight four really cool things about Free Buddhist Audio as a community web project as opposed to just a website. First thing is that when I started Free Buddhist Audio, I used to have to upload everything myself. So I used to have to go and get the talks, usually record them, listen to them, break them up into tracks, annotate them, make MP3s of them, tag all the files, and upload them to the web. And it took absolutely ages. Just even all the stuff we had already, but new talks coming in, people used to send them to me, and gradually this huge pile of unprocessed talks built up on my desk. And actually it still exists, it still sits on my desk, and you've been to see my apartment, it's a huge pile of mini discs and tapes and things that are still waiting to be done. So we moved from that model to being a community based project. So now there are over 20 different FWO projects, or sorry, Triratna projects, I should say, in 9 different countries in the world. And people essentially archive themselves. So we created an upload system so that people could effectively take what they communicate in their local situation and send it out to the whole world, but also make it available to their own sanghas. So Free Buddhist Audio has become community-based. Because we do that, we also provide access to most of the content in about 4 or 5 languages. If you count Indian English as a language, then we do it in 5 languages. And we also make them available in formats for people who live in countries without broadband. So a lot of the Dharma audience in India, for instance, is on dial-up modem. So we make versions available for people who are on slow connections so that they can. It doesn't just become a kind of Western plaything for those who can afford broadband. Probably the most interesting stuff about Free Buddhist Audio as a community thing is that when we were Dharma Tartar Tapes, as I said, we used to distribute, I think it was around about 3,000 products a year to people. With Free Buddhist Audio, there are 150,000 individuals at least every year who access the talks. And there are 20,000 people a month who receive a podcast from us automatically on their computer, a Dharma talk on their computer. And they live in 189 countries around the world. So there's just this massive jump in scale, which is very pleasing for me, because when I remember getting excited by Napster and just thinking, it'd be really cool if you could do that. You know, if you could have all of those people all over the world. And the biggest consequence of that is that in the 3 years, well, by the end of this year, which will be 4 years, we'll have distributed our 1,000,000th Dharma talk. So we've distributed 1,000,000 Dharma talks in 4 years, which is pretty, as they say in America, that's freaking awesome. It's freaking awesome. So I'll come back to 1,000,000 Dharma talks, because it's a really big milestone for us. And in terms of evoking the sense of the possibilities for the internet in our community, it's really worth bearing in mind. You can talk to that many people. There's no Buddhist centre on earth, as far as I know, that's had 1,000,000 people go through it or anywhere near it. But 1,000,000 people have gone through Free Buddhist Audio in something like 4 years. The big news that I've got actually is that tomorrow, all being well, Free Buddhist Audio relaunches in a completely different version. I hope it launches tomorrow. There's no way I'm going to be able to check that it launches tomorrow till I get home and get a connection. if you'd like to hear about it, I'll be kind of around in the Dharma tent and very happy to geek out and talk about the new Free Buddhist Audio and why it's completely fantastic. The idea was to rebuild it after 3 years because the internet's completely changed its nature in the last 3 years. 3 years ago, who had heard of Facebook? Who'd heard of Twitter? They didn't really exist in any meaningful way. And now, something like more, I think it's now more than 60% of all internet traffic goes through those kind of contexts. So it's no longer enough just to build a website and expect people to come and get your stuff. You have to take your stuff to the spaces that the people are. And the people are overwhelmingly on social networks. So we've rebuilt Free Buddhist Audio to try and take account of that and to bring a sense of community much more to the fore. Because all of those people are connecting with the Dharma, so it'd be a good idea for them all to connect with each other. So Free Buddhist Audio 2.0 launches tomorrow, and I hope you'll go and play with it. Again, I suppose you might be wondering how that relates to the little exercise we did at the start, and how it relates to this kind of evocation of sadhana and of felt presence and the mystery of the bond. In a minute, well not in a minute, but in a little bit, I'm going to ask for your support with Free Buddhist Audio, both financial and moral, which is possibly even more important for us. But that's not really the main point of talking to you about it today. It's important and crucial that it's funded, and it's important and crucial that it has people's backing. But the main thing is that the whole point of Free Buddhist Audio is you. Well, it's the Dharma, but actually by extension it's you. Everyone who uses Free Buddhist Audio is our Sangha. If we're a Buddhist centre, our users are our Sangha. And everything we do has to be about all of us. And that's very much what we want to develop going forward with the Sri Lankan internet generally, which I'll come back to. I think it's quite important because, for starters, the recordings that we hold at Free Buddhist Audio and Dharma Chakra Archives is the collective history of the FWBO. It's not the whole of the history, of course, but it's the collective history, and in a way everything that's happened has happened in relationship to the kind of material that we are the guardians of. It's like a record of our small spiritual movement growing up in public and sometimes in private. And you can see the different staging posts as you look through the archive and hear the different ideas that came in and re-radicalised a spiritual movement. So it's important because it belongs to all of us. It's our history. It touches all of our lives, even if we don't know it. If you're here taking part in Buddhafield, if you've got any connection with the Theravada Buddhist community, it all comes out of those original talks by Sangharakshita. If they hadn't happened, we wouldn't be here. So it touches our lives, and it touches the lives of people again that you don't even know exist, which is quite a thought.
I'm wearing a t-shirt today, a little Ray Bradbury t-shirt about a book.
When I was a kid, I remember reading books and just being completely overtaken by the idea that somebody had written this book who didn't know I existed, and it was changing my life. Here was having, you know, myself cheered up or inspired or depressed by a book I was reading, and this person didn't know I existed, and yet they'd written it and it seemed written just for me. And quite often we get that kind of feedback. People write to us and say, I downloaded this thing and it just changed my life. In fact, I came across a blog entry where somebody who wasn't a Buddhist, who wasn't involved with our community, had heard one of our podcasts from some years ago where, I think it was Jnanavacha, had talked about working with depression. And this person suffered from really bad bipolar disorder. And they hadn't done anything about it at the time, but it stayed in the back of their mind. And a few years later, they'd remembered the talk, and they'd gone and got help for the first time with the depression. So they'd written this blog entry saying, these people somewhere gave this talk and I remembered it, and it really sorted me out. And I remember coming across it just feeling so moved and thinking, this is absolutely fantastic. I don't even need to do anything. And you can have that kind of effect in your work. So to take it kind of a bit further, I think that the approach to sort of building a Buddhist community on the web that we take, I think we model something at Free Buddhist Audio and the team where we're trying to, instead of just talking about the Dharma or building a really cool website, we're trying to sort of invest every facet of what we do with Buddhist values. whether it's aesthetically or functionally or the way that we deal with people who write to us or the way that we do write livelihood as a team. You know, although I'll come at the end, I'll kind of make my appeal. Anyway, I'd like to focus more on this aspect of it, this kind of, in real life and mythically, what it is to really take seriously the idea of community online as a practice, and doing that as a practice. So, there'll be plenty of time at the end for discussion, which I'd love to have. I guess the world is always changing, and the world has always changed, and each generation thinks that the world that they're in is changing faster than everybody else's, and probably harks back to some golden age when everything was simpler. But I think our generation of human beings could probably be forgiven for laying a particular claim to that false sense of their particular time being special, because if you've witnessed the birth of the internet, just the sheer speed of it, the sheer speed of change has been absolutely staggering. I think it's no exaggeration to say it's a change at least on a par with the Industrial Revolution in terms of the way society is changing through the internet and connection. By its very nature, the internet is fast, and sometimes it seems completely vast and in a certain way completely impersonal, and that can be a very strong experience, just to be in that and have it permeate your life. It's possible to be entranced and beguiled and seduced and quite intoxicated by what comes at you day to day through your computer. It's possible to be horrified and a bit heartsick and a bit kind of soul worried about what comes at you every day through your computer. You can experience that, or at least I can experience it, almost as a tsunami of data that just kind of breaks over you. And in a certain way, it's amoral and it's got nothing to do with me. And it just gets the feed that never stops. It just goes on and on and on. On the other hand, every day I can be completely moved by the sort of lives and stories that come to me on cables that run under the ocean and wires that run under the earth and waves that come over the air. And I love to think about these kind of like wireless things as these little kind of glowing particles, each with their load of information, like little kind of fireflies of data, little kind of honey data bees that kind of swarm in, bring people's lives in, and I can almost reach out and touch them. That's the experience. So I guess it's like, what do you do with it all? And more importantly, maybe what do we make of it all actively? Instead of being passive recipients, what do we make of all this individually and collectively as a community of fellow travellers? What do we make of it all? I think in a way it goes back to that exercise at the start, that sense of being connected to people with glowing bonds and connections of light, data travelling at the speed of light between one hand on a keyboard and another hand on a keyboard. And that somehow being invested with meaning because it's about connection. And try to bear that in mind. As soon as you break the sense of connection, well, in a way it is amoral, and it is impersonal, and it's got nothing to do with you. As soon as you maintain a sense of connection, it's about your friends, it's about your family, it's about your community, it's about your values. And I suppose actually it's worth remembering that behind the internet, all you've got are human beings. That's all you've got. They're beautiful, they're flawed, they're sitting at their screens in the daytime, in the nighttime, and they're in their lives, and they're longing for something. I mean, that's what's going on. They're loving, and they're suffering, and they're looking for meaning, and they're looking for connection. They may or may not be going about that very wisely. They may or may not know that that's what they're doing, but that's what they're doing. Yeah. And it's not a new story. It's the oldest human story that we share. That sense of people sending out into the universe, that kind of sense of, it's almost like touch me, you know, wanting to be touched, wanting to be met, wanting to be connected. And it's in a way it's the ground we've got to share, just in your daily lives. That's the ground you've got to share. I was thinking about it earlier and thinking, well, all the internet is, it's not a kind of new constructed paradigm that people need to fear or be worried about. It's just the latest iteration of that age-old process of all the human transactions playing out. That's all it is. It's a set of human transactions that are going on. And behind those transactions is the pursuit of happiness. It's the pursuit of meaning. And that's, as I say, not very new. It's just that it's writ larger than it's ever been written before. And it's written globally, and it's written in a format that most people can access any time they like. And that's what blows everybody away. And in a way, that's what makes us afraid. It's just the sheer scale. To ground it a little bit in real life, I want to talk a little bit about the team at Free Buddhist Audio. So when I first thought of Free Buddhist Audio, it was just me. 2001, it was just me. And over the next 3 years, Akasha Priya joined me. And Akasha Priya lives in London. I lived in America. So when Free Buddhist Audio launched in 2004, I lived in America and Akasha Priya lived in England. And then Samudra Dhaka joined us. Samudra Dhaka currently lives in Saudi Arabia. So you've got America, you've got England, you've got Saudi Arabia. And then we took on another couple of people from the area that I live, Virya Leela, who some of you may have come across lately, on tour for Free Buddhist Audio, and Eric, who's our kind of community liaison officer, and he lives near us. But we've also got two sort of volunteer members of the team who are kind of like regular volunteers with responsibility. One is a lady called Mary, who lives in San Francisco. And one is a lady called Colleen Carpenter, who lives on the Isle of Jersey. So we've got America, East Coast, America, West Coast, England, Jersey, which is technically part of England, but I don't think they think so. And we've got Saudi Arabia. So we know what it's like to try and make Dharma connections meaningful on the medium that is the web, because we have to do it day in, day out as our chosen context for work. And it is actually a choice we make. We have to make that choice and renew it regularly to try and promote the Dharma globally on that kind of scale using that kind of technology, with all the attendant dangers of that. But the point is, for us, the internet is a fact of life. It's not going to go away anywhere soon. So actually we're interested in how do you make a virtue of it. As practitioners, we deal with whatever reality brings our way. It's whatever arises in your experience that is your experience. The internet is part of what arises. How can we bring Buddhist practice and values to that? And how can we make it meaningful? I guess the point there is that it's the medium and not the end. So the potential of the medium is obviously huge. The thing about a million Dharma talks, now, we never conceived that we would distribute a million Dharma talks. And we went to see Sangharakshita recently and told him, "Hey Bhante, at the end of this year we're going to distribute a million Dharma talks." And he was visibly taken aback. I mean, he was like, you know. And I don't know if you know Sangharakshita. If you know Sangharakshita, he doesn't say things he doesn't mean. Sometimes uncomfortably, he doesn't say things he doesn't mean. But we told him about it, and he was really happy, but he was also a bit taken aback. And he said in response, he made a little video for us, which was really nice. You can watch it online. And he said that when he heard that we were about to distribute a million Dharma talks, he realised it was one of the most significant developments in our new Buddhist community for many years. He got the scale of it. And he also got the fact that matches his particular vision for the FWBO when he started it. He wanted Buddhist centres all over the world. That's a slow, concrete process that involves human beings. And on the basis of those conditions, suddenly we've got enough momentum to take advantage of the internet and distribute Dharma really widely. So there's huge potential in the medium. So it was really reassuring for us because anyway, you go along doing this kind of work, and sometimes you wonder, is this what I should really be doing? Would it not be better for us teaching meditation to real people at a real Buddhist centre, even if there's only five of them in the room, you know, rather than putting all my energy into the internet? And it's particularly relevant to us because the team at Free Buddhist Audio has taken on to do the new website for the whole Triratna Buddhist community, which is going to be called thebuddhistcentre.com. going to launch sometime between 6 months and a year's time. We're not quite sure. Same round of politics and money, etc., that happened at 3D Studio. But it will launch, and we'll do something fantastic with it. And it's a really big challenge, because you have to create a website, and we're having to do this with 3D Studio too, where you do two things. One thing is, you adequately represent the clarity of teaching in your community. And the other thing is, you adequately represent the breadth and diversity of the people who listen to that teaching in your community. And if anyone's paid any attention to Israel politics, that's not a very easy marriage to make, because lots of people have views about this. I've been listening to them for 4 years, believe me, lots of people have views about this. And I get emails every day where somebody tells me what it is, how it should be. So it's an interesting challenge. So it's very good to go and see Sangha Rajtan and hear him say, this is good work, this is what you need to be doing as a team of relatively young people who are still excited about the potential to radicalise your life that the Dharma represents. And we want to tell people about that. I saw my friend Loka Bandhu earlier, and I was having a laugh saying, I'm going to have to reference you in my talk, because there are two main criticisms that I've heard since 2001 when I first pitched Free Buddhist Audio to a very sceptical chairs meeting. They didn't like it as an idea. Didn't like it as an understatement. But they didn't really like it as an idea. And since then, everybody's kind of come on board with it. But I've had two main criticisms about this kind of work. One is that the internet is fundamentally a distraction. By its very nature, it's a distraction. Yeah? And the second criticism is that by its very nature, the internet is alienating. And how can you do this? It's like you should be talking to real people. We want real people at real Buddhist centres coming along. That's what we want to do. So I get that quite a lot. And when I was a bit of a younger man, I used to be a little dismissive of that. When it came my way, I found it really frustrating because it was in my way. I wanted to do this thing. Which is of the nature of confession, because actually I don't think that was a very skillful response. Probably understandable, but it wasn't very skillful. These days, actually, I take those criticisms very seriously. Partly based on my own experience of how you can get sucked into the web, particularly as it changes so fast and it's constantly thrown up, come and do this, come and do this, you know, it's kind of great. And it's kind of awful as well, it's been kind of great. But partly also just because people have continued to say it, and I'm assuming that they're not continuing to say it in the abstract, but somehow it reflects something in that experience. So I've been taking it very seriously in redesigning Free Buddhist Audio, and I've been trying to take it very seriously in thinking about how we're going to structure the BuddhistCentre.com when it finally happens. Is in a way, what you want to do is create something that's adequate for the community, but also really embody the values that that community is founded on, and make sure that that's a present part of the experience of going to the website. So you're not just telling people it with words or even with videos or even with pictures, the whole experience of how you use the thing should be pointing you to an experience of deeper engagement, single-pointed engagement. So I think what we're going to do is build a slow network that's based on trying to cultivate a sense of positive engagement, meaningful practice, and meaningful sharing of practice through relationship. So a bit like asking you all to sit down and face each other and hold your hands up. Like that's what we're going to be doing on a kind of global scale, and trying to encourage anyone who comes along to take part in that. If they want to find Facebook, they won't find Facebook. We don't need to reinvent Facebook. Facebook do it really well. I love Facebook. But we don't need to do that. But what we need is something that is recognisably Sri Ratna, as we all work out what that actually is. And in fact, the old FWBO did that kind of thing really well. That's what we did when we built Buddhist Centres. We recognised the need in the world, we recognised the suffering of human beings, and we tried to respond in a way that emphasised the possibility of connection and the possibility of relationship that in a dharmic context could change your life. And lots of us have experienced that, and all we're trying to do is do that all over again. So I actually relate to my work these days as quite traditional. I think I'm quite a traditionalist. We're just doing it in a kind of slightly wacky area and on a slightly kind of crazy scale. And I suppose the most important thing just to finish with before I talk a little bit about the future of Free Buddhist Audio is that, again, it's what we make of it that it's not a passive process. I can build the grooviest, most useful website you've ever come across in your life. I can make the easiest systems for you to use to take advantage of it. But unless people actually decide that the internet's a fact of their life, and the kind of way that they engage with it can be a part of their practice, in whatever relationship to the rest of their practice, that's up to them. But when you use it, and when you connect with other people in our community, that it can actually be a meaningful experience over time of making relationship based on values. And in that sense, it's deeply community oriented. It is a practice of Sangha, or it can be a practice of Sangha. And if that sounds like a lofty ambition, well, actually the practice of Sangha itself is a lofty ambition. That's what we're challenged by whenever we come on any of these events or go to Buddha Center. So I guess the message would be, to make progress in our spiritual lives, we need to take seriously that we need to remain connected with each other. And the way we remain connected with each other is crucial. It's great to have a new name as a global spiritual movement, but if that's all we do, then it's just a piece of magical thinking. We're just saying, ta-da, we've got a new name, and now we're all united. If you actually want to build that across cultures and across language barriers and across borders and across genders and everything else, then you need ways to engage that really make for meaningful change in people's lives. And I think if we do that, if we kind of do that together, instead of being a piece of magical thinking, Triratna, as we work it out, can become a sort of magical reality that's illuminated from the inside by us. We become the little particles of light, we become the little glowworms and data bees that buzz around, and it will just become an effective space for collective practice. The internet will be an extension of our practice as a community and as individuals. So one way that you can help engage with us immediately, if you have a look at these, Free Buddhist Audio is free. That's why it's called Free Buddhist Audio. And whenever people suggest us that we charge in order to fund ourselves, I like to say to them, well, we need to call it Fee Buddhist Audio, and that wouldn't be nearly as interesting. So please take this away and have a little read, and perhaps most importantly, tell people about it. Because the thing about community-based ventures is they're nothing without the people who engage with them and the people who appreciate them. And without word of mouth, we wouldn't be anywhere. There are 1 million Dharma talks in 4 years. There are 150,000 people a year, 20,000 other people a month. We do no advertising. So it must all be word of mouth, because we have no money to do advertising. As you get bigger and as you become more successful, of course the challenge is to keep funding it all. Now, since we started, we've had a mix of donor support from people who use the site and grants from the Triratna Buddhist community. Those grants are no more. So if you appreciate Tree Buddhist Audio, if you think the work we do is important, if you feel connected to that and to kind of investing in a way in the future of the Triratna community online, then please think about becoming a regular supporter of Free Buddhist Audio. We've worked out that if we have 500 people who give us the equivalent of £10, $15 a month, we'll be sorted for the future. So it's not actually that many people. You've got 150,000 people a year. You've got however many people that is over 4 years, 600,000 people. We've got the whole of the Triratna Buddhist community worldwide. We need to find 500 people who are going to value what we do. £10 a week, or £10 a month, sorry, is less than your lunch money one day a week. So, Free Buddhist Audio wants your lunch money. That's the thing, we're going to come and get your lunch money. Asking for money for things is something that we've never done that much of. We've been very content to kind of sit back and just focus on offering a service. And it's important for us to say that we're going to find any way to keep doing that. So the service is not dependent on you giving us money. We don't want to guilt trip people into it or let them feel that something will be lost. But if something will be lost, it's more like the opportunity to kind of develop the thing and take it forward, and to not have to cut staff, all that kind of stuff. I think it's probably, as Sangha actually says, one of the most significant things that's happened. I'd say along with Buddhafield, it's the most significant thing that's happened in our community for the last 10 years. You could argue various other projects deserve that too. But I think in terms of the reach of something, the number of people who've been affected, and the effect it's had on the culture of the whole movement, I think there's an argument for saying that. So one thing you can do is become a supporter. The other thing you can do, actually, whether you do become a supporter or whether you can't afford to, is really go and try and help find some of those people for us. So if everybody in this room went away and found five people to become friends, that'd be, what, 50 people, something like that? Represents a small amount of money in the grand scale of things, but a large amount of money to us. And basically, people can fundraise whatever crazy way they like. You know, go and become an ambassador for Free Buddhist Audio. Talk to people about the work we do and why it needs supporting. You know, remind people that if they've ever gone to a Buddhist centre, all of the teaching there is founded on the work that we do. Remind all the mitras that you come across that if they engage with the Dharma training course for mitras, then they are in the debt of Colleen Carpenter, this volunteer who lives on Jersey, who I've never met. She's part of my team and I've never met her. I've never even heard her voice. But she volunteered. We wrote to each other on email for a while. And she's responsible for proofreading the whole of the Dharma training course for mitras. So without her eagle eye looking at the files that I put together, there would be no Dharma training course for mitras. Which is completely awesome. I mean, I really hope I get to meet Colleen someday. I'm sure I will. But that's how connected we are into the lives of Buddhist centres, but I'm not sure most of the people who go to centres know that. So we really need people to go out and really become ambassadors for what we do and actively encourage people to support us. If you're on a centre council, go and talk to them. If you go to study groups, talk to the people in your study group. Have a jumble sale, have a dance, have a dinner, have a Dharma talk evening where you all put out a hat and listen to the Dharma. But really get in